I've been thinking a lot about what we pack lately. As I've lived with the gospel message for the last few weeks, I've been noticing what Jesus does and doesn't pack for his journey, and what he recommends to his disciples to pack and not to pack. Especially this week in my class for Doctorate of Ministry at Drew, when our professor invited us, my clergy colleagues who have 15 years of experience in ministry, to reflect on how our communities had responded to the Supreme Court's decision on marriage equality. And I was just itching to say that I had been at the UCC General Synod, and while we didn't lose sight of all the suffering and the needs in the world, and certainly the struggle after the killings in Charleston, we celebrated that decision. I went to the Open and Affirming Coalition dinner, and people who had been together for 30, 40, 50 years wept and held each other. Gay and straight allies celebrated. It was a beautiful, beautiful moment for our church that's been so out front about all kinds of discrimination, about the radical inclusivity of Jesus. But my colleagues were not of the same mind and heart. None of them are UCC pastors, and most of them come from churches where judgment and damnation is more common than not. Certain people are in, others are out, and they went on at length about how this wasn't biblically correct and how we had to stand up against the Supreme Court ruling and tell our people to resist. And I thought of what a chance we were missing there to bring people together regardless of how we feel about this, regardless of where we stand about this, or the other momentous decision by the Supreme Court about the Affordable Care Act, affirming the stipends that are paid for that, a moment where we could revel in the glory of God and come together and say, we're about love. We're about love and justice and compassion and mercy. What opportunities we're missing by dwelling in judgment and condemnation. Jesus was not about that. Jesus was not about judgment. He was about an open-handed, open-hearted love. And so, as I draw near to my 2 weeks where I'll have to be on campus with these folks, I begin to think about what I was going to pack, literally going away to stay in a student dorm for the first time in many years. And did I have to get one of those caddies to carry to the restroom for when I took a shower? And what were the appropriate clothes to wear in the hall for the co-ed dorm? I also thought about what I was packing as I went. As I heard the comments of my clergy colleagues and saw postings on Facebook and the news of the reaction and the condemnation and the fear, I realized that I carried some fear in my own body, going to a place where it was as if I wasn't in the room, as if so many people of our friends and families and colleagues weren't in the discussion and they were damned. I was carrying judgment about them and the theologies that they held. I was certainly carrying, packing my spiritual shield so that I could go into that environment and hold on through 2 weeks of classes from 9 to 5 and lots of homework in between to not fall into that bickering and yelling and blaming and shaming of anyone. The things we pack, the things we literally take with us on our journey are important, but the things that we pack inside, our years of experiences, our assumptions, our biases, our readings of Scripture, our fears, our resentment, our anger, our wounds, our celebrations, our privilege, those things matter too. And so I begin to start to unpack some of the things that I realized I would be taking to school, and I pray and hope that you'll pray for me that I'll go a little lighter, open-hearted, open-handed, ready to meet people and love them where they are and see what good thing God is doing in and around us. In our story in Mark's gospel, we find Jesus on the move too. We see what he carries with him and what he doesn't. He has been moving fast ever since his baptism in the desert with John, from which the Holy Spirit sent him into the wilderness, and he emerged in Galilee around the Sea of Galilee, around the town of Capernaum, where he saw how the people were being exploited and oppressed, and how, as a result, they'd become seriously, mentally, and physically ill. He taught in the synagogue there, and he cast out demons and healed people made sick and poor and disenfranchised by the system. They loved him. People on the edge who had never met him before, they didn't need for him to carry any pedigree or curriculum vitae or clergy profile or any authority recognized by the religious leadership or the Roman Empire. They saw that he loved them and that he cared about the lives that they lived. And he saw why they were sick and how they were sick. It was there he called his first disciples from the seaside, fishermen and day laborers, and began to gather such crowd that they hadn't time to eat or rest or any place to even stand because of the crowds who wanted to touch him and be touched by him. He was so pressed by the crowds that he asked his disciples to get a boat from which he could stand and teach and heal the masses of people who came seeking him. Week before last, when I spoke with you from the pulpit, we saw him asleep at the helm of the boat when he got ready to cross to the other side, and we thought about what it means to cross to the other side, where people are different from us, where they may not accept us. He knows that he's going from a place where he is beloved, where his ministry is affirmed, where he can't do enough to please the people. They are solidly behind him, and the ministry is growing like wildfire. And he is asleep, and his disciples say, "Wake up, there's a storm." And he says, "Not hold on, not batten down the hatches, but peace be still. Peace be still. God is with us wherever we go." What he was packing, not oars, not a backpack, not stuff that he would take to the people to show them who he was and what he came to teach and how he came to heal them, but simply themselves and the light that of God that shined through them. Jesus and his new disciples crisscrossed the Sea of Galilee and faced the crowds who loved him, but there was also this growing fear of violence by the religious and Roman leaders who had come to hate him and feel threatened by him. So we have this tension between the crowds who adore him and the authorities, both religious and political, who were very threatened by him. It's not so different from today. His ministry grew rapidly to include some unexpected new disciples. Every day there was a healing of someone who had been left behind by the dominant culture. In a couple of weeks, David Buss will preach about the story of the religious leader Jairus, who comes to Jesus and falls on his knees and says, "Won't you heal my 12-year-old daughter who's on her deathbed?" And Jesus goes to her and touches her and lifts her up. And when he leaves, she is restored to the fullness of life in community. We know that threshold for girls 12 years old, the time when they can turn inward or sense their power, their calling, their chosenness. And Jesus saw that child, that girl child, at 12 years old. He had no business, according to the religious hierarchy, to be in her room, to touch her, to see her, to lift her up, and she was chosen as a new disciple. And then there was the woman who had a reproductive disorder for 12 years, who came up behind him in a crowd and touched his robe. She had the audacity to touch him, a woman who was considered unclean, and he felt the power go out of him. And she was healed. Every day his ministry grew broader and more threatening to the powers that be. Every day another person was added, a person who had been left behind, marginalized, disappeared, was important to the ministry of Jesus. Jesus was on fire, and people were following this man who practiced a radically inclusive and healing ministry. He saw them. He heard them. He touched them and was touched by them. His was a ministry of presence and power with, not pressure and power over. People recognized his authority. They saw and heard and were healed in relationship with Jesus. Their experience with him was all they needed to recognize God in and through him. In today's reading from Mark's gospel, Mark writes, Jesus left that place. You know that place where people like us? You know that place when we're with our people? You know that place that feels good? We can relax. Our bodies, minds, and spirits can open up. We are loved. We are affirmed. We are in the right place, on the right path. We can sleep well at night. Our energy is centered. He leaves that place. Jesus is always leaving that place of comfort and support and going into new territory. He comes to his hometown, and I saw some people nodding their heads. We know what it's like to go to our hometown. He was the oldest child. The people say, who is this? The son of Mary. Not the son of Joseph. Why didn't they say the son of Joseph? Had Joseph died? And if Joseph had died, then Mary was a widow. And for Jesus to have left his widowed mother as the oldest son of his four brothers, the eldest, to have left to find his own way. Nazareth was a small town, 500 people, backwater. Scott Shoemaker loves to remind us that Galilee in general was, well, like South Central in Los Angeles. It was where the, Eugene Peterson says, the riffraff hung out, right? The thugs, the homeboys. He got out. He dared to get out, and he's coming back, and he's teaching with authority, and he thinks he can heal us? Who is this person? He's a blue-collar worker, a person made poor. He's one of us. He was a stumbling block for them, Eugene Peterson translates. They couldn't get over him to get to God. And isn't that the way it is sometimes in ministry? Isn't that the way it is in the world today, that some people can't get over the stumbling blocks of the packaging that we come in, of this or that? No, that's not like Jesus. That's not like the first 12 disciples. No, they don't have the right pedigree. But don't we know in our heart where we meet somebody through whom God shines, and we know from our experience who has authority, the authority given only by God? I'm sure it was odd to those friends and family. There was division in Jesus' family. We know he was accused of having a demon, the devil, inside him. And he told his disciples, sometimes you have to get beyond your family because they can't get over you. They can't get beyond you, the you you were when you were growing up. I know when I go home, I couldn't preach a sermon there. My family would laugh. They would chuckle under their breaths because I'm not the kind of minister they grew up with. And they're kind of curious about my ministry, but it's a very different model of church. And I, being the middle daughter, go back and I kind of disappear. You know what that's like to go back to your family? So it's just a weird setup. But to scoff at Jesus and or his disciples because they don't have the right equipment for ministry. Today is to take offense just like the people in the synagogue did for Jesus. And let's face it, there are parts of the gospel that are threatening, they are annoying, they are offensive, they are irritating. That's just the way it is. So Jesus has experienced that. He knows that feeling in his body. He knows better than to send his disciples out one at a time. God forbid, he's not going to send them to the backwater around Nazareth, the communities there by themselves. He knows. John, the leader, was killed. He knows better than to send them out one at a time. They go out in twos. And he tells them what to pack and what not to pack. He says, don't take anything except your staff. And remember the 23rd Psalm, thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Staff, God, take God with you. Other stuff gets in your way. Just take God with you. That's all you need. They didn't have Bibles back then. They didn't have scrolls to take. They weren't supposed to take any of that stuff of ministry. For today, it would be no suitcase, no wardrobe, no smartphone, no laptop, no iPad, no headset, no Fitbit, no snacks, no reading material, no eye covers, no earplugs, all the things that we take just in case it's place we're going that, you know, we're not going to be comfortable or have our needs met. Jesus says, go and experience the hospitality of the people. Isn't it a whole lot easier to offer hospitality than to receive it? To be the one in control of the menu, to be the one in control of where people sleep and what happens and what towels they use and what kind of things you do. When people come into our church, it's easy to offer hospitality. But to go and not know whether the bed's going to be comfortable, whether it's going to be noisy, whether it's going to be an air conditioner that blows right on you, or whether there's going to be an air conditioner at all, or will there be mosquitoes, or will there be people that, well, you'd really rather not spend more than a few days with. Jesus says, go and stay in the same house until it's time to leave. Oh my gosh, sometimes you can get to know people too well. So we know that offering hospitality is a lot easier than receiving hospitality. And Jesus says, take the risk. Unpack your stuff. The stuff that makes you feel secure. The stuff that makes you feel powerful. Unpack your privilege. Unpack your assumptions. Unpack your fear. Unpack your shield. Go ready, because you might be rejected. And if you do, shake the dust off your sandals. That's it. Don't wail and moan. Don't go tell all your friends. Just go someplace else. Today, in our world, where things are so contentious and divisive, where people are yelling at each other, damning each other, where we have gridlock in Congress, just about everywhere, where everywhere we go, the water cooler at work, church, the bus, the grocery store, dinner parties, there's contention. We're to go and risk being ourselves, taking ourselves, and letting God shine through us. Feeling the hospitality, going to listen and learn and be transformed and transforming. It's not our stuff that convinces people. It's our being. It's the word within us, the good news for all God's people that convinces. And we never know when a seed that's been planted that appears will never sprout one day does grow and bear fruit. Sometimes the news of it, the goodness in it, comes back to us, and sometimes we will never know the fruit that we've brought about on this earth from our labors. When Jesus speaks of faith, he's not talking about what we hold in our heads or in our hands or on our back. He's talking about what we hold in our hearts and what we do with our hands and our lives and our power. Faith is having an allegiance with God that informs every single one of our actions. Faith is about aligning ourselves with God, trusting that as faithless, doubting, fearful, resentful, and flawed as we are, we too can get up and follow Jesus, who loves the deserving and undeserving alike. Faith is experiential and relationship. The Word made flesh, literally embodied through our daily practice. It's what we say and what we do with our lives. It's how we spend our life on life. What do we really need to take with us on our journey? What stuff gets in our way of being vulnerable, open-minded, open-hearted, and ready to receive and grow in understanding and love? What are the stones we need to take out of our backpack that impede our forward movement as God's precious and beloved community? What will we pack to carry on our faith journey to prepare us to be in relationship from across distance and difference? There's a book called White Privilege, Unpacking the Invisible Backpack. Has anyone ever read it? It's about 15 years old. But it is something that's very important for colorless people these days in our struggle to recover from racism. It's written by Peggy McIntosh, and it talks about privilege as an invisible backpack that we carry. Privilege in many ways. Each of us has our own distinct privileges. In October, we'll have a 3-day retreat and workshop, concert, workshop, breakout sessions, and sermon. And a woman named Jennifer Harvey, who is an ordained American Baptist minister, an associate professor of religious studies at Drake University, and author of a book called Dear White Christians, for those still longing for racial reconciliation. We'll be unpacking our backpacks with generosity and grace, not to whip ourselves into a frenzy of how bad we are or wrong we are, but to say, how do we all suffer from carrying stuff around that is hurting us, that are stumbling blocks to our loving each other and having a world of justice and compassion and freedom? So mark your calendars. And in the coming weeks, may we begin to examine what we have been packing in order to lighten our load. May we lean more into the God of everything and everyone, taking our open hearts and minds, our curiosity, our kindness, our willingness to receive and be transformed and transforming in and through community. May it be so. Amen.